Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, then listen closely to the next 30 minutes. For healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This, as always, is Straight Talk on Health. My opportunity to get to you the inside track on health. Holistic medicine, a confusing journey. Especially confusing for doctors who are passionate about seeing people heal. You know, the consumer, the patient, the client sees their journey as sort of a labyrinth, because any of you familiar with holistic health know that everybody's got an opinion. And how do you know who's correct, right? That's on the tip of everybody's tongue. How do you know who's correct? Well, that's a trial and error experience. And as a doctor, when you see patients, you kind of get the sense of they're new, they're green. You know, for some people, eating organic food is news. For other people, they've been in the game for 20 years. They've seen every doctor. They know more than half the doctors they see. Those people are spinning. It's not their fault that they're spinning, but they're spinning because nobody's gotten to it, or they haven't gotten to it. But for whatever reason, they have a rather seasoned view of holistic health. My point to you is, the most seasoned view you get from trial and error, well, think of the doctor after 5, 10, 15, or 20 years. The doctor's heard everything, seen everything, done everything, and still the doctor can be spinning. And that's the truth. Doctors spin as much as patients spin, and together, two spinning entities meet and they spin each other more. Thus the reason, as I never stop emphasizing, people stay sick year after year after year after year. The purpose of this show, Straight Talk on Health, especially if you're new, understand you're listening to a show that tries to give the essences, meaning what really works, how do you separate the wheat from the chaff, how do you get down to the pearl here and the pearl hair and the pearl here. That's what a teacher's supposed to be. A teacher's supposed to take the time, because it's his specialty, her specialty. They've studied long and hard, and then they take the essences to try to give them to you in civilian language or in easier language than they learned it. And if you think about your own dedication, your own profession, well, it's been filled with all those time-tested, arduous journeys where you just got a little bit of special, essential knowledge, and you guard that. I mean, you covet that with your life. And over 10 to 20 to 30 years, you build up a repertoire of what really works. We all do that respective to our own passions and professions. Thus, Straight Talk on Health. Now, where am I going with this? Well, today we're going to get into constitutional typing. But we're going to get into the myths and the mistakes of constitutional typing. What do I mean by constitutional typing? Go to your health food store, look up on the shelves where the books are, and you'll see dozens of books, each book telling you that there's a new insight and a new way to understand you and your health and what to do about your health based upon the new insight, and so on and so forth. Example, one of the prevalent notions over the years has been that you can look at the eye and tell special things about yourself, without which you could never determine what the eye can tell you. And this has been coined under the subject iridology. And so some people do iridology. Some doctors are what you call iridologists. And they spend much of time focused on how to read the eye and determine what's there. I did that. I studied with David Pesek, who studied with Bernard Jensen. I did all the certifications, bought the microscopes. And I can take pictures of the eye or just look at the eye with a microscope or with a magnifying glass and determine so many things about it. Iridology is a separate entity in holistic medicine. Then there's microscopy. You take a person's blood and you look at it under a microscope and you can tell certain things about their health that way. And we have people who devote their entire life to microscopy. Then you have people who read the pulse. Then you have people who read the tongue. And built into reading the pulse or the tongue, or built into reading the eye or reading the blood, are both diagnosis and therapy. Built into it is, look, this is what you've got, this is what's wrong, and built into it then is, well, what we can do about it. And so on and so forth. And there are many, many, many ways to approach the body like this. Now, the first myth. Well, before I say that, let me say this. I want to add to that astrology. If a person, say, a triple air sign, meaning their sun sign or their birth date, and let's not get occultish about astrology. We're not going there. Don't insult yourself or me by thinking that this is some sort of occultist perspective on life and health. This is nonsense. The fact of the matter is, if a person's born, say, in June, the middle of June, they're what you call a Gemini, and Gemini is an air sign. If their rising sign and their sun sign are also Gemini, that person's what you call triple air, because Gemini is an air sign, just like Capricorn is an earth sign, just like Aries is a fire sign. And all the signs have different connotations, meaning they can be air signs, water signs, earth signs, fire signs. That's another type of typing. You can type someone in iridology. You can type them on the basis of their tongue. You can type them on, in the Ayurvedic sense, Vata, Pitta, or Kapha. And you should do that. And it's great to know this stuff. But there's certain roadblocks. There's certain ways to get to reality when you type, and there's certain ways to get trapped into myths and mistakes. And that's today's show, The Myths and Mistakes of Constitutional Typing. Correct perspectives in typing yourself. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. The next half an hour, we're going to get into what you can learn about yourself quick and easy that you can take to the bank and trust. First thing you're going to do, those of you at home, not so much if you're driving, get to the website, straighttalk.cc, not .com. Now let's look at the pictures. I put picture 1 through, 10. All about the tongue. The tongue. Stick out your tongue. Easy stuff to learn about the tongue. First myth, half of it is bogus. There's a big one. I can tell you my personal experience studying the tongue, studying the eye, studying the pulse, doing microscopy, doing iridology. Half of about everything you learn is nonsense. I want you guys out there, especially you doctors, to understand. You put $15,000 into an iridology machine. You put $15,000 into a microscope. You put $15,000 into some Zyto machine. You put $15,000 into an Avatar machine. You put $15,000 into an Acuscope. You put $15,000 into a MyoPulse. You put $15,000 into something else. I mean, you're going to spend a couple of $100,000. You're going to spend $500,000 on testing equipment. Half of everything is bogus. Now, that's a large statement, I know. It is a true statement. And if you study the evolution of knowledge specific to each and every one of these subdivisions, you're going to find on the inside track, people are fighting with each other all the time about the reality of the finding. So I'll give you an example. When I studied iridology with David Pesek, we did a seminar once somewhere, I think it was in Ohio. It was great. Iridologists from all over the world came, but it was very clear. The ones that came from Germany, the iridologists from Germany, and the Germans did and do great iridological work, had extreme disagreements with the American iridologists. And when you're studying this stuff, you know, this is costly, it's confusing, it's annoying, it's depressing, it's all those things that go with it. And I can't get into specifics, but German iridology and American iridology. Then there's tongue diagnosis. Pulse, try to get unanimity among guys that take pulse. Try to find unanimity among muscle testers. Line up a patient, have 10 good muscle testers, muscle test that patient, and you're going to end up with 10 different findings, each having nothing to do with each other. Hopefully having some overlay, but usually having minimal overlay. So these things are very confusing. And it's very suggestive of the fact that, yes, if you really study it, meaning if you take the finding and then you go out and you use it to try to help somebody, you find that you're in the middle of nowhere with it. So especially to you doctors out there and therapists, understand that when you learn these things, iridology, when you learn muscle testing, when you learn tongue diagnosis, so on and so forth, and clients out there, patients being tested by doctors, by therapists with all sorts of equipment, machinery, etc. Just understand, these are great things, no criticism, but half of it's bogus. And that's all I'm going to say. Now let's get to what you can trust. This is where no one should argue. This is what you can take to the bank. Picture number one, stick your tongue out and look at the coat on your tongue. If you see down the sides a yellowish, damp coat, like goo, yellow goo, especially yellow goo coming down the sides, this is called damp heat. And damp heat in the back, damp heat in the sides, means if I go up there in your bile ducts of your liver, if I go in between your liver cells, if I go down into your intestines, they're filled with toxic mucus. And mucus, of course, is always what? Secreted in response to some pro-inflammatory ecosystem, some pro-inflammatory terrain. And so your first job then is to decongest your body, to get rid of all that snots up in your liver gallbladder, into your intestines. Liver gallbladder cleanses, colon cleanses, changing the diet so that you don't make as much mucus in response to inflammation. So the notion of damp, as you can assay by the tongue in Chinese medicine, is suggestive of too much mucus secretion in response to too much inflammation. Ding dong, done. That's what they should be looking at in the hospitals. That's what nobody should argue with. And if you can't figure the mechanism out behind it, it's called empiricism. It's empirical. It means we don't know why the tongue gets yellow and mucousy when the rest of the body is yellow and mucousy. We don't know why the tongue is more congested in the liver and gallbladder when it's yellow and mucousy down the sides. We don't know why the tongue is more congested in the colon and not the liver and gallbladder. You take an overweight person, they're always going to be mucousy in the gut. But if they do a lot of enemas and flushes, they won't be mucousy and yellow and damp down the sides. We don't know why, we just know it is. And we know every time it is, meaning we can reproduce it. To be able to reproduce your finding, even if you don't understand the mechanism, is called empiricism. All these things that your scientists laugh at, tongue diagnosis, pulse diagnoses, iridology, microscopy, muscle testing, are filled with empiricisms. empiricism is very valid. Empiricism is used in pharmacology. So while the men in white, the allopaths, the FDAists, the AMAists, attack these empirical systems, pharmacology is just as empirical. Many drugs are used without knowing why. But we use them anyway, because when we use them, we can bet on this happening. Same thing here. When we see yellow and greasy down both sides, your liver and gallbladder are plugged with yellow, toxic, bilious, mucus snots. And you've got to drain that out of you and get it flowing, and you're going to do good for your health. Empiricism. Now, if you stick that tongue out and it's yellow and damp, but it's got spots, that means the liver's hot. The liver is so inflamed at this point, it's scarring up. That's an advanced piece of it. So you stuck your tongue out, you checked it out. Again, I put the books on picture 8, picture 10. You guys get interested, Kirschbaum and Machiocha. But Kirschbaum's is better because it's got all the pictures. It's laid out very, very nicely, where Machiocha did the cheap version. It's just black and white. He's got a little color part in the back, but Kirschbaum really makes it easy to see these different types of tongues. And then you got to dope out what it means. I gave you one that's legion, famous, easy to determine. Here's another one, picture 3. Stick out the tongue, lift your tongue up, and look for those big blue veins. Bluish purple veins. When they're purplish and bluish, it means the blood is not moving through the heart and the lung, especially heart and lung, less liver, but especially through the coronary system, the blood is not moving correctly. Very easy finding. If the whole tongue is purple and the veins underneath are purple blue, it's telling you. Now, it's not so that you diagnose heart disease. See, this is the crossover you cannot do. You can't say you have coronary disease. You can't say, oh, that's a heart attack on the way. You have to say the health of the heart demands a low viscosity or normal viscosity blood that moves and flows. And when you see those purple, bluish, bulging veins under the tongue, it's telling you that the heart blood, the venous blood especially, is not draining through the coronary system at the right rate. And it's telling you the viscosity of the blood is way too thick. That's huge. That you can take to the bank. Just like the yellow mucus on the tongue, you can take it to the bank. Picture number 4. If you look at that, that's somebody, when you stick your tongue out, it curls up. It curls up on the sides, and it curls up at the tip. That's called liver qi constraint. Liver qi constraint. Those are people who internalize their emotions, and it chews up their liver. Those are people who internalize their emotions, and it heats up their liver. Those are people who internalize their emotions and it makes their tendons tight. Those are people who internalize their emotions, and that emotion usually is frustration to anger. They're not letting it out. They're keeping it in. The tongue turtles up. Go figure why. We're not interested. This is empiricism. Those people are going to have neck ache, back ache, muscular ache. Just an internalized personality that underneath the surface smile may be seething resentment. Picture 6, crooked tongues. That's when internalization of emotion starts to deviate the tongue, because the internalization creates what you call wind. Wind is you're holding it in so much that it makes the tongue crooked. Or you've had severe head trauma and your cranial bones are so malaligned that it makes the tongue crooked. Either way, those are more serious signs of concern. Now, suppose you had a tongue that was turned up, liver qi constraint, that was also crooked. And suppose it was red, not purple, red. Now you've got a situation where the body's boiling. all the way to the point where all that heat can go up and affect the brain. And so on and so forth. All right, Rome's not built in a day. Remember, on the website in about an hour, we're going to have a more comprehensive version of this show posted. So those of you that are really into this stuff, check the website out. That's straighttalk.cc in another hour. And I'll have a much more comprehensive version of this posted to the show for those of you who really like to get into this stuff. Stick your tongue out if the tongue is pale. If the tongue's like whitish. If it's thin. If you can barely stick it out. If it looks like picture 7, look to the anemias. If you're not looking at the anemias, then you're looking at deficiencies in the blood. If somebody's got a scalloped tongue, those are little indentations along the whole perimeter of the tongue, and the tongue is thin, and the tongue is pale, then their digestion's not getting the food in. You see this in certain types of people as they age. Great books, Kirschbaum, Machiosha. A bunch that you can tell about the tongue quickly. Now let's keep going. Let's go to another way you can determine what's going on. Vata, Pitta, Kapha. This is picture 11 and 12 on the site. If you're there, that's straighttalk.cc. If you're driving, just listen. What's the difference between Sophia Loren and Katharine Hepburn? What's the difference between a featherweight boxer that's 5'10" and looks like a string bean and a guy like Mike Tyson? What's the difference between people who are large boned and people who are very slender? Like people who just can't put enough meat on the bone. People who, if they don't eat enough, will go a little frail. And people who, if they look at food, they gain weight. Those people are supposed to approach their lives differently. What about people in between who just have this tendency to go up into a cauldron of fire at the drop of a dime? And when so agitated, they're like a furious storm. Muscular like a snake. Not large like the rhinoceros. Not tiny. But middle ground. Sinewy. Muscles like steel cables. But aggressive, almost to the inappropriate point. Vata, Pitta, Kapha. The Kaphas are the big ones. The Vatas are the frail ones. The Pittas are the ones in between. These are classifications in Vedic medicine, Ayurvedic medicine. Here's another insider's track. The vast majority of people are not Vata, Pitta, Kapha. The vast majority are mixtures. In addition to which, people come into the world a certain way, and in defense to their life as they socialize, as they age, in defense to it, they change their dosha. The Pakruti and the Vikruti in Vedic medicine represents your essence dosha. So somebody may be born very slender and very frail, and because of life's tragedies, they may be 200 pounds overweight. So they come into your office and they're 200 pounds overweight, and you go, oh, well, that's one of those big coffers. And you take their tests and you give them all sorts of questionnaires, and they expose themselves as kapha. But in truth, those are kaphas that are just covering a Vata's body. Vata being Katharine Hepburn, kapha being Sophia Loren. That's to say that Katharine Hepburn, or that slender, frailish type, in response to life's traumas, puts on 200 pounds. That's more the way people run around. And this is so important to understand as it relates to understanding Again, another way to classify yourself. Another way to type yourself constitutionally. You've got to make sure you get to your essence constitution, and you've got to make sure you understand how you're covering your essence constitution up. Again, I'm going to lay this down for you just so we can get a sense of another typing. Why type yourself? Very simple. Very simple reason to type yourself. If you know you're a Vata, you're going to have to eat often and nutritively and make sure that your stress levels never get to the point where you're starting to become cachexic or to the point where you're starting to waste away. If you're a Pitta, you've got to make sure that your liver never gets so inflamed that you start building rage and that it starts expressing inappropriately. That will damage a Pitta more than a Kapha. That will damage a Pitta more than a Vata. Each type is susceptible to different pitfalls. A Kapha that sits at a desk, the big lethargic type that sits at a desk, doesn't exercise, eats heavy, oily, greasy foods, will get more Kapha. If you add Kapha to Kapha, you have disease. I saw a Pitta this morning that was also frightening. It was almost frightening. He walked into a store. He ordered something. The cashier almost fainted. The guy was just having a normal day, but he was so Pitta, so emblazoned in fire, like smoke coming out of his eyes. I said, I hope this guy gets into the flushes. I literally did. I literally thought to myself, this is a guy that needs to cool down. Now, of course, he was a layperson, didn't understand any of this. Someday he will be affected because his body's starting to burn. The Vatas I see all the time, men and women, especially women, as they age, if they're Vata-esque, as they age, what happens as you age? You start becoming more deficient. Well, if Vata is pushing to deficiency in the 50s, in your 50s and 60s, by the time you're in your 70s, you're disintegrating. Those are those sweet little old ladies whose voices crack every other syllable that the wind may blow over. Charming, charismatic, lovely, wispy, beautiful, the whole thing. Just look at Katharine Hepburn in her later years. This is a Vata trying to make sure she doesn't go to an extreme Vata imbalance. As always, I don't get enough done. Get to the website. There's so much on the eye. There's so much on other forms of constitutional typing. Maybe we'll do a part two for my show next week. We'll see. Make sure you get to the website an hour from now. I'm going to have a much more comprehensive version for you to hear. Happy Saturday. God bless you. We'll see you next week. Okay, welcome to part two. If you're listening to this part, it means you're on the website. Fantastic. Why? How am I going to get this done in a half an hour? We could do two shows on this. Maybe we will. I don't know. But I want to make sure those of you who have taken the time to get to the site for this half of the show get their time's worth, and you will. A lot of doctors and other therapists listen to this show. You're welcome to do that. Pick my brain. Go ahead. Bottom line, I'm telling you right now, the half a million I've invested in equipment, half of everything is junk. Let's just start there. That's a good thing to do. If you do that, what you'll end up with is what works, and you'll stop pursuing fantasies. Of course, the slant, and it's good for patients to hear this and for the public to hear this, the slant on this is you invest $15,000 or $20,000 in a machine, the salespeople are going to baloney you into saying all sorts of garbage about what it does that it can't do. All sorts of stuff it sees. Somebody did a Zyto reading on me the other week. I mean, come on. I went through this with the Avatar machine, the Vol machine. Good stuff. Don't get me wrong. Good stuff. But you see, if you have a hammer and that's all you have, the only thing you see are nails. And this is the problem when your testing modalities are limited because the doctor's funds are limited. So the doctor saves up, especially people that are starting out. They save up. They have one machine, and that machine's got to tell them everything. And, of course, who's there to back up their delusion? The people that sell the machines, who, of course, take their money and pay doctors to teach others how to use the machines. Bunko. All right? Been there, done that, listen to the malarkey. So everybody remember, half of everything is nonsense. Well, that's what makes life interesting. You have to figure out the truth from the fiction. As you know, what I'm trying to do today, especially, is to give you what you can take to the bank. So, first of all, you know, when we do the analytics on the website, you've got people getting referred by a friend or searching the internet, doing a Google search, and, you know, myths and mistakes of constitutional typing, correct perspectives in typing yourself. And, of course, what does that mean about my heart disease? I want to know what I have to do about my heart disease, about my cancer, about my autoimmune problem, about my low back pain. He didn't talk about any of it. You people who are on the show listening to this, who just happen to surf to it, understand you have a butt-backwards perception. You really have an ass-backwards perception. It's not your fault, but you have a mythical view of what you're getting involved in. Anybody that thinks that your illness is going to be resolved by reading or listening to somebody's formula for how you resolve that particular problem is nuts. It does not work that way. I want to be respectful here, but I'm also going to be emphatic because there is far, far, far too much perception, mythological perception, delusional perception, as it relates to I'm going to do searches on my problem, and I'm going to compile a list from all over the universe, an intergalactic list of everybody's solution to my problem. It doesn't work that way. That is a small piece of it. You'd be much better off building health. To build your health is a matter of knowing, of constitutional typing, done correctly, what's wrong with you, meaning where are the anomalies from your genetics to your lifestyle that you have to augment drastically so you can build your health and then take that currency and apply it to your cure. You see the difference? All right, this show's not about that. I want to get to constitutional typing, but you guys who fit that description, you remember what I said. Okay, stick your tongue out. If you see damp yellow, clean that gallbladder. It means you've got too much mucus up in the biliary ducts, and those ducts can go very, very deeply into the liver. So we're not just talking, guys, about the gallbladder. And again, you coffee enema addicts, those of you who do the coffee enemas are great, but they will not clean the deep bile ducts of the liver. You're not going to get the play in the deep lobes of the liver. In other words, on a person's right side in the back, the right posterior rib cage, if you stick your finger through it, you're going to end up gouging someone's liver. That part of the liver are the deep lobes. You have bile ducts there. Coffee enemas aren't moving too much bile out of those ducts. You've got to get to the olive oil flushes. This is where Moritz was so right on. Moritz was not running around talking about coffee enemas. Moritz was running around writing books and swearing by the long-term effect, 2 years worth, 3 years worth of liver flushes. That is how you regenerate that liver. Get into Bernard Jensen's colon cleanses. Get into Anderson's Cleanse and Purify. Regularly sweep the large intestine. Regularly sweep the bile ducts and watch that yellow, greenish, ugly looking coat on the tongue, that stuff you brush off in the morning, watch it go away. If you're going to be in a more developed state of that, that tongue is going to be red and spotted. That means you're starting to inflame. The hepatocytes of the liver are beginning to change their form. They're beginning to show higher levels of oxidative stress. That's what those dots mean on the tongue. It means the liver, although not in a fibrotic state, or certainly not in a cirrhotic state, but it does mean that that liver is starting to heat up in a way you don't want, because those ducts cannot drain the snots out of the liver. Kind of simple, isn't it? You're out on a first date. Your prospective girlfriend sticks her tongue out, and it's got all sorts of yellow glob on it with spots. Look for smokers. Look for women on the birth control pill. Look for women who are constipated. Look for women who are rageful. It's a sign. And again, it's just a sign. And again, here's another myth about, okay, in this case, tongue diagnosis. Here's a myth. And that is, just because you don't see it doesn't mean it's not there. Can you have people who have clogged bile ducts? Can you have people who have gallstones? Can you have people who are up to have their gallbladders taken out and you don't see any sign of it on the tongue? Yes, you can. It's called a false negative. Let me put it together for you. These empirical typing systems based on what? Understanding of mechanism, ding, ding, wrong. Based on you see it, and when you see it, it's usually there, and therefore you duplicate it, and through trial and error, you confirm that when the tongue is damp, yellow, it means the biliary system's clogged. These empirical systems often enough give false negatives. What does that mean? It means you go to acupuncture school, you learn tongue diagnosis, you know pulse and tongue, you go to see your acupuncturist, they know pulse and tongue, your gallbladder is clogged from 30 years of garbage, and they're using their tongue, they're using your tongue to determine it, they made a mistake. Why? False negatives. False negatives exist in regular allopathic medicine. If the mammogram doesn't see it, it doesn't mean it's not there. If the MRI doesn't see it, if the blood test doesn't see it, doesn't mean it's not there. Blood tests are famous for false negatives. Why? Because the blood's a buffer system. So all these tests you do in the blood are always going to give you false negatives, because the blood is going to be filled with nutrition to maintain the buffer system, to prevent the brain from going kookaloo. So you're never going to see it in the blood. By the time you're seeing it in the blood, you're on your way to ER. Mineral deficiencies that your organ systems, your cells are suffering from, that the intercellular fluid is suffering from, you're never going to see in the blood. There's another false negative. So it's not just that these typing systems, like in this case tongue diagnosis, are filled with false negatives. Everything is filled with false negatives. That's why you have to do multiple tests. You have to test in a bunch of ways. It's why I do iridology. I do the microscopes. I do the tongue testing. I do the muscle testing. I look at blood work. I go to a trial and error comprehensive approach from A to Z over time. Half the stuff you learn in response to the problem. Half the stuff you learn through trial and error. Patients out there, clients, patients of mine out there, half of what I learn is in response to how you respond. And you know what the toughest patients are, the ones that have no response. everything they do doesn't show a response. You can't get an answer out of them, so you can't tell what's going on. Well, you can, but there's nothing better than a patient who gives you responses, who's feeling their experience. All right, let's go up underneath the tongue. Again, this thing about blood viscosity. Thickness of the blood. If the blood's thick, you're cooked. If the blood drains slow, you perfuse slowly. If the blood's draining slow, the blood's going to go in slowly. You're going to see that as a purplish tongue. You're going to see that with those purplish blue sublingual under the tongue veins. When you see it under the tongue, a lot of that stasis is liver, heart, and lung. Gotta watch people like that. Women with those big purple veins under the tongue. Watch that as it relates to the breast. It means the gunk in the breast that creates a problematic bond in the fat of the breast, thus a precancerous state. I mean, ladies, we have to get on this. Why is it the breast that's so vulnerable to cancer? Why? Think about that. Why the breast and not the kidney? Why the breast and not the heart? Why is there so much more breast cancer than lung cancer? They're both in the same place. You'd think that the lung, right? You'd think the lung, exposed to the garbage in the air, would be way more susceptible than the breast. But that is not the case. It's the fat, ladies, in the breast. Carcinogens are lipophilic. Carcinogens bind pesticides, petrochemicals. This gross malware of toxicity through the Long Beach port, gently deposited in your fatty tissue, is driving your cancers. One of the big drivers. So when you stick the tongue out and go up underneath the tongue and the veins are purple blue, does that mean you have breast cancer? Is that a marker for cancer? I hope you're saying no. I hope you're saying no. I hope you're saying it's a marker for bad health. It's a marker for blood viscosity and blood stasis. And to reduce your cancer risk, you don't want stasis of blood. If you can see it like that, light a cigar. Stick a stogie in there and light it up. You score big. You internalizers. Stick that tongue out and it curves up. You're internalizing. Done deal. Done deal. Nothing else to say. It means your sympathetic nervous system is holding your bile ducts in the liver. That, classically speaking, stick your tongue out, the whole tongue turns up. That's called liver chi constraint. Those people are not telling you how pissed off they are at you. You see someone like Humphrey Bogart with a tight upper lip that sticks the tongue out and the tips turn up. That is a cauldron of rage. That's a sympathetic dominant individual. I've never seen that not be the case. These people are pissed off in ways you can't imagine. You don't know what at what. It could be at you. They don't know at what. But underneath it all, they're suffering. And they got to get there, because that's going to get them. It's, again, another marker. And you cannot say that means you have this disease. It's nonsense. That's the myth. You can't say there are not people who internalize that don't have a tongue like that. Right? Again, that's a false negative. To think that that's not the case, to think that that's anything else, that's another myth. To think that very often, well, I guess I should say it this way. Constitutional typing systems are infinitely more likely to give false negatives than false positives. In other words, when you see it, it's there. Okay? When you see it, it's there. When you don't see it, don't think it's not there. Let's keep going. This Vata Pitta Kapha. First, everybody's a mix. Yes, you have extremes. Mike Tyson was an extreme Kapha. Dwight Muhammad Kwai, he's a boxer. His name was Dwight Braxton. The guy fought George Foreman. He was 5'6¾", just 5'7", and he fought George Foreman? George Foreman was 6'4", 260. Kwai got beat, but he lasted 13, 14 rounds, and he was already an old man when he did it. So was George. But in all fairness, think about it. 5'7", and you're fighting George Foreman? That's because Dwight Braxton, I put him there. What picture did I put him? Picture 22. That's him on 23 as a much older man. That is a Kapha. All right? Kaphas build sludge. Kaphas gain weight. Kaphas need to stay away from foods that build mucus. Dairy builds mucus. Meats build mucus. And again, you can't be too general because that's how you get all screwed up. Oh, a Kapha. You have to stay away from meat. Suppose he's an O blood. This is why you guys, you have to cross-reference. You have to integrate multiple systems. Suppose a person's a Kapha, but they're an O blood. As an O blood, chances are they're going to thrive on meat. Chances are they're going to get weak without meat. How about someone that's an A blood that's a Vata? I'm going to make it a little more complicated. Suppose someone's an A blood that's way more vegetarian prone. Suppose they're from South America, one of the tropical countries, Nicaragua, Colombia. And suppose they're an O blood. Now, what do you do with that? As an O blood, they may well be infinitely more prone towards animal protein. As an A blood, they may be way more prone towards vegetarian. But it can get complicated. Suppose it's an A blood, and they're way more prone towards a vegetarian lifestyle. But they're Vata, and they've suffered from anorexia. So they're almost, they are cachexic. They're in deficiency. A year or two on meat, raw meat, may be fantastic. But that's a contradiction. Suppose you have a Kapha that's an O blood, and part of that Kapha on Kapha means that they've got to give up meat. But they're an O blood. But you take them off meat and they cry, they scream, they say, I have no strength. Maybe for 6 months they should go vegan. Maybe after they drop 60, 80, 100 pounds. How about O bloods that are Kapha that pack on an extra 100 pounds and they go vegan for a year? They're only 30 years old, 35, 40. They got tons of reserve. They knock off over 100 pounds, 100, and then they start writing books on veganism. You run into them when they're 45 or 50, and they're dying. They're sick. Why? Well, they were in excess. This is where you got to be careful with Vedic medicine. The Pakruti and the Vikruti. Pakruti is the essence dosha. Vikruti is how you express. You have to distinguish between the essence of the person and what's happened that's not them, but that's covering them up. Vatas are dominated by the thyroid gland. Kaphas are dominated by their adrenal gland. Kaphas have strong adrenals. Vatas are very thyroid driven. They are fast metabolizers. They're fast oxidizers. So there's X work on oxidation types. fast oxidizer, mixed oxidizer, slow oxidizer. Your slow oxidizers are your coffers. Your coffers put weight on quickly, but they've got an unending reserve of energy. Cough is the elephant. Cough is the rhino. Cough is the hippo. Large, wide, thick, lethargic, slow. But once they get going, man, try stopping them. You throw a house on their back, they'll keep going. Then you have those skinny little mice-like people. They get going fast. Rabbits get going quickly. But they don't have too much endurance. Leopards are in the middle. Leopard is the pitta. The rodent is the vata. And the big prehistoric lethargic mammal. Vatas are dominated by thyroid. Kaphas are dominated by adrenals. Pittas are dominated by pituitary. If you check Beeler, Food is Thy Best Medicine, you'll see some great differentiations between the thyroid type, the adrenal type, and the pituitary type. They fit the doshas perfectly. So what's going to happen to a pitta? A pitta is going to develop fire as an imbalance. A kid that's a pitta by constitution will tend to go out of balance into rage. Kaphas will go out of balance into depression. Under stress, a kapha eats and gets more sedentary. Under stress, a pitta brings more fire, gets more aggressive. Under stress, a vata stops eating and loses 20 pounds in a week. So when you're thinking about yourself, you know where your fragilities are. If your tendency, if your sense of your tendency as a pitta who fits that description is such that you fly off the handle more and more, your blood pressure is spiking more and more, your face is getting redder more and more, you just sense an inappropriate aggression. But you've always been carnivorous in your nature. This is the pitta gone out of balance. You've got to cool it down. And yes, yes, flushing the liver cools down the pitta. But the diet has to be a diet that cools pitta. So all the foods that build inflammation and heat, which is inflammation, they have to be avoided. A cough is going to suffer from the oils, from lethargy, from the stress of lethargy and more lethargy from stress. Look for low thyroid in the kapha. See? Think of the kapha as a bigger load of ice cream. You got to melt the grease out of a kapha. You got to move a kapha. A kapha that's being taught meditation may not be the way to go. Meditation is sedentary. Kaphas need to get pushed up the side of a mountain. But maybe not if they're in A blood. An A blood hates getting pushed up a mountain. You got to learn the blood types. A bloods, O bloods, B bloods, AB bloods. The essences of the blood types. A bloods like uniformity. A bloods like small portions. A bloods de-stress from meditation, from the more genteel things. A bloods don't like what the O blood likes. For the O blood to balance blood pressure, for the O blood to lose weight, for the O blood to get into balance, the O blood likes the sprints. Short sprints. The A blood goes out and runs 12 miles. The O blood needs some sprints up a hill. Look at D'Adamo, Peter D'Adamo's book, Eat Right for Your Blood Type. Yes, yes, yes. Not all of that book is good. What's my point in the show? Not all of everything works. But D'Adamo made a huge contribution, the personality typing. In other words, how does the O blood maintain balance? A blood, B blood, AB blood. That work is Nobel level. Everyone should understand that. I gave you sort of a few examples just now. And your B bloods. Being a B blood, that is the ticket, man. And the B bloods live the longest. The B bloods are most resistant to disease. If you ask D'Adamo in his clinical gut, the blood type that really put it together, it's the Bs. The Bs are the finest blend of the Os and the As. The ABs have only been around for 1,200 years. We're not sure what they are. They don't fit any type. You can't figure an AB out. You're not supposed to figure an AB out. AB is supposed to figure out AB. I mean, I'm giving it to you straight. This is what I do. I'll get your blood type. I'll get your tongue. I'll muscle test. I'll do the iridology. I'll do the blood work. I'll look at pictures of your blood up on the microscope. I'll throw you a set of things to do, and I'll ask you to tell me. I'll ask you to listen to your response to everything, to the cleanses, to the herbs. Based on your response, I'll attenuate it to try to move you along in the direction of you. You're kind of getting a better sense of the ins and outs, the ups and downs of typing. And you're going to find when you start integrating the typing, you have to accommodate those places where they conflict. I already gave you that example. If you say that D'Adamo's work on O bloods tend to need to go paleo, right? And you have a kapha that's an O blood. Well, that kapha aspect doesn't do so well when they're packing on meat. Meat in the sense of the perspective that says meat as opposed to veganism. I mean, if you listen to Brian Clement of the Hippocrates Institute, someone I have the utmost respect for, he's going to tell an O-blood who's overweight to go vegan. And I would agree with him, even though D'Adamo would say go paleo. Let's assume he would. Let's assume that the notion that an O-blood is going to metabolize much better on meat than a vegan diet, which is in direct conflict with Clement, McDougall, Furman, and a whole bunch of people. So what's what? My answer to you is to put it all together and use your brain. And doing that for you right now, I submit to you that an O blood that's kapha, that's overweight, can really do well as a vegan for a certain period of time, and then he's going to go deficient. And that's when you've got to bring in some meat. And it may be less meat, because he's a kapha. Now, an O blood vada, they may be eating a pound of meat a day. They may be the ones that really need the meat, because vadas have a higher metabolism. It's just common sense. And of course, vice versa is also true and serves my illustration. If you have an A blood who is kapha, well, that's a perfect scenario. If that A blood that's kapha, that's much overweight, is a meat eater. You see this from people in the Midwest. The Midwest has a lot of A bloods. I'll give you a stereotype that's fascinating. I've met so many A bloods from the Midwest who are true porkers. I mean, they are into the ribs, pork, beef. the meat, the meat, the meat, the potatoes, the soda, the whole thing. A-bloods, heavy meat eaters, 50 years old. I mean, they are caked lard by the time they're 50. You send them into veganism, and that is life-changing. An A-blood raised on meat that finds Brian Clement at the Hippocrates Institute is going to have a miracle, right? Well, D'Adamo would attest to that. They're A-bloods. Whereas the O-blood is what I described a moment earlier. Now, what about an A-blood that's a kapha versus an A-blood that's a vada? Well, an A-blood that's a kapha is going to pack it on faster than an A-blood that's a vada because their metabolisms are different. They may both need to end up being vegetarians. One may be a lighter form of a vegetarian than the other. That's the difference between A and O. That's the difference between, vada and kapha, both being A-bloods. The A-blood that's a vada may need more density to their vegetarianism. I'll give you an example of something that'll blow your mind. It'll really serve you, my advanced group, or those of you surfing the internet that are saying, but he didn't talk about my disease. I'm going to keep chiding you on this. The vast majority of people surfing the internet, listening to radio shows, reading books, do it because this is the book about your disease. We need to stop this. You have to stop the overemphasis on that approach. I didn't say, and I don't mean, stop it completely. Of course you should read about your disease. But the specifics of your disease are 20% of the cure. The other 80% is build health. And I'm being generous. Really, I want to say 95% is build health. We are never going to be able to control with real precision the interactions that go into building health. What you do is feed health in the right neighborhood. Get yourself in the right arena and keep building health. Don't look to put yourself in the right neighborhood, on the right street, in the right house, and then monitor that house every day to build health. Do not do that. You're insane and ignorant if you do that. But here was that example I wanted to give you. How about, this is one that's close enough to my experience. This was a real patient. An A-blood that's a vada that's triple air. An A-blood that's a vada whose astrology is triple air. So A-blood is like air. A-bloods are the vegetarians. Vada is like air, air and ether. And this individual's astrology was all air. All air. No earth, no fire, no water, nothing. Just triple air. That person would have been dead without dairy. Dairy. Dairy that the vegans are against. Dairy that the blood typing is against. Dairy that paleo is against. Dairy that everyone's against. This individual evolved to radiant health on butter, on cream, on all those things that none other than the infamous Agenis von der Planitz, the primal diet. You know, it's very vogue to be after dairy. Don't do dairy. Paleo says no dairy. Clement says no dairy. McDougall, Furman, this, that, the, everyone's anti-dairy. Well, I got to tell you, an A-blood that's a vada, that's triple air, their life dependent on it. Someone that's extreme vada headed to cachexia from what? From an anthropological viewpoint. Now we're going to bring in anthropology. So you bring in your anthropology. You bring in your blood type. You bring in your astrology. You bring in what the eye tells you. You bring in what the tongue tells you. You bring in the dosha. Look at that. Now you got a cross-reference between them all. That's how you contour a diet. That is the essence of typing. It's not cookbook. It's dynamic. Learn the data, piece it together. You are your own great experiment. And in that respect, you can do all this to you. You can learn this. If you're a lay person, you can learn it for you. That's it, gang. Those of you listening, those of you surfing, the phone number is 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. I'll see you guys next week.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.